This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. This week, we'll start off with the adventures of Philip Marlowe and The Man on the Roof, his story from April 4th, 1950. Then it's Nick Carter, Master Detective, and Death in the Pines, his story from March 4th, 1944.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter, the prison of the grave. This time, an old Spanish woman who cared. A red-headed mink who didn't, and a green suede button beside a corpse. All led me to a wounded man with a gun in his hand, cornered on a warehouse roof. It happened like this.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Now, with Gerald Moore, starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's transcribed story, The Man on the Roof.
Hey, officer, there he is again, the top.
Your eyes open, Mooney.
Trying to make the roof, officer. Look, he's bleeding. You got him the last time. Yes, there he goes.
There he goes, Mooney, up there. The iron lad leads him to the roof. Let him have it.
They missed.
He's on the roof now.
He made it, Lieutenant. He's on the roof. Should I go up the fire escape after him?
No, he's got a gun, Mooney, and he's hit. Put in a call for tear gas launchers. We'll use them from the roof across the street.
It'll take a half hour.
He isn't going anyplace. Go ahead, Mooney.
Okay, Lieutenant. Hey, here comes Marlowe.
About time I want to talk to him. Mooney, on the roof. He's over the edge there. Fire, Mooney.
Matthews, hold it. Mooney, don't shoot again.
What are you talking about, Marlowe? He's a killer. He's armed and dangerous.
Listen to me.
What do you want us to do? Scold him and send him home without a supper?
Matthews, I'm going up after him.
No, you're not, Marlowe. Come here.
Let go of me, Matthews.
Listen, Marlowe, nobody goes up there. We're going to gas him out. Come on, Mooney. Call for launchers.
Matthews, please, listen to me, will you?
No, why not? Tell me the whole story. We got nothing but time till we get here with those launchers.
Please, Matthews, quit kidding.
Nobody is kidding, Marlowe. That boy up there is a killer. Keep watching that rope, Becker. You make it curious. Well, Marlowe, this story you got...
About 10 minutes ago,
at
Matthews...
At the beginning, Marlowe. Go on, Phil.
I'm trying to.
We'll start at the front. I'm a sucker for detail. You got a half hour before the tear gas arrives.
Okay, Matthews, I'll start at the front and skip nothing.
Right.
I'll start where it started 4 hours ago at 5 o'clock this evening, some 15 miles from here on the outskirts of a little town of San Fernando. A telephone call from a woman whose voice had said that she was old and Spanish and very worried. It brought me out to the place. A woman named Senora Andrade who told me that her only boy was heading for a lot of trouble and that I had to stop him. The Andrade home stood out like a thoroughbred alongside the milkman's horse in comparison to the other houses squatting on the sun-baked soil. And the Senora herself, at maybe 60 and in a cheap black cotton dress, a lace shawl and homemade slippers, was the tidiest person I'd ever seen. When she bowed from the waist in graceful greeting, I saw a single small ivory comb was the only thing holding a mass of long gray hair in one neat bundle.
Senor Marlowe, you will excuse me if I do not extend you the hospitality of my house, but Pedro... Pete, he likes to be named. He's already gone. There is no wasting time.
Of course. Pete, your son, Senora, huh?
Si. And a good boy, Senor Marlowe. Here. Here is a photograph of him. It is taken only a week ago on his 25th birthday.
Really?
He was so proud of that green jacket I made for him. It was suede and flashing, he said. Flashing like something the rich Mr. Alex Brucher would wear. He has it on every day since then, even today.
Alex Brucher, who's that, Mrs. Andrade?
The senor who owns the warehouse for furs in Los Angeles.
Oh?
Number 12 Commercial Street. It's where my Pete worked until 2 days ago, when the trouble started.
Well, what happened, senora?
It was during his lunchtime. He was eating from a meal I made for him like he always does and talking to a stranger, some... how you say, senor? A man with no job all the time, eh?
A bum, a hobo, a loafer?
See, he was just telling me how he was telling him to find the railroad yards. That, senor, is where the trouble began. Oh, please, senor Marlowe, you will have a chair there.
Oh, yes, thanks. Now, tell me, senora, this trouble. Surely giving instructions to a loafer, as you say, didn't start it.
Oh, but it did. After the lunch hour, the foreman, a Senor Connor questioned Pedro about this loafer. And when my boy said that the man was only asking for the railroad yards, this Senor Connor said he was a liar, that Pedro was giving out information about the shipments of furs, that he was fired, discharged.
Just like that?
Let's see, Senor. After 2 years of good, hard work. You see, Senor Marlowe, Pedro tells me that Senor Alex Brucher has been having his shipments of furs stolen on the road.
Hijacked?
Hijacked. And it is this reason why Pedro is fired.
You want me to prove to Mr. Alex Brucher that Pete had nothing to do with this hijacking, huh? Get his job back, is that
no,
it?
No, senor. It is too late.
Why too late?
Pedro already went down there this morning to do that.
Oh.
He went and told Senor Connor, the foreman, that he had nothing to do with the hijack. And more. He told him, Senor Marlowe, that he was fired because of Helen Castile.
Who's that?
The pretty girl who for a short time now works in Senor Brucher's office.
Oh. Well, then I don't understand, senora.
This Helen Castile and my boy are falling in love. But Senor Brucher also likes this girl.
Oh. What happened when Pete told this to Mr. Brucher?
He never did. Before he even got to speak to Senor Brucher, that devil man, Senor Connor, and some other men beat him. Cut his face, blood on his arms, his clothing torn. He came home just before I called to you. Almost dead, Senor.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, how about now?
Now, Senor Marlowe. Pedro has gone back. Revenge in his heart. That is why you must stop him. Senor, you must bring him home before he kills. Before it is too late.
Take it easy. No, take it easy, Pobre senor.
Cito.
Don't worry. I'm sure I can bring him back, positive.
Oh, gracias, senor.
It's all right. It's all right.
Here, senor, in this can. I have money. 19, maybe more dollars here. You take
no,
it.
No. Not yet, Mrs. Andrade. I don't think it'll cost that much. We'll see, huh? Goodbye, senor. It was an hour's drive to the Brucher Fur Company warehouse on Commercial Street in downtown L.A. I started up a long cement ramp that led to a glass cage in a far corner of the warehouse marked office. It was just about the end of a working day. And when I was next to the door, let it enter, a bell someplace said that the end had arrived. You could tell the way everyone's spirits went up. Everyone except the girl inside, half leaning on a file cabinet. I figured she was Helen Castile until I got closer. The on-fire red hair and green eyes with hat and shoes to match could have gotten by. But the coat she wore was mink. So was the attitude. That would never take shorthand for $40 a week. Things just couldn't get that tough.
Hello. You look like you lost something.
Oh, is Helen still here, Helen Castile?
Gone to powder her nose. Maybe back before she leaves for the day. May not. I don't know.
Oh.
You a friend of hers?
No, Pete Andrade's.
Never heard of him. Got a light?
Oh.
Please.
Sure. Now, tell me, Miss...
Haynes, Corey Haynes. You?
Marlowe, Philip Marlowe. Miss Haynes, is Alex Brucher around?
Mm-mm. Home packing is going out of town. It does every other week. Important business?
No, I just wanted to chat with him a while.
Oh, Connor, is Alex's car gassed and ready for me?
Yeah, it's ready. It's ready, Miss Haynes. Here are the keys.
Thank you. And, Connor, please, stop wishing I were dead, will you? I can feel it, and it gives me the creeps.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Miss Haynes, but, well, maybe we won't be seeing so much of one another so soon.
If you mean Helen Castile, Connor, she's a great secretary, period.
Yeah, sure. Now you, Mr.
Marlowe.
Mr. Marlowe.
I'm a friend of Pete Andrade's.
Said enough, mister. Almost too much.
Now, wait a minute, Connor.
A lot of hot air? Listen, Marlowe, we've been running into all kinds of trouble around here. Hijacking, short shipments, misdirected cargoes, the works.
So?
So it all adds up to somebody on the inside helping somebody on the outside, and that ain't good. Now, take my advice, brother. Get your long nose out of this place and keep it out if you don't want it bent.
It's the phone, Connor. If you lift it up, it'll stop that noise.
Very funny. Hello. Oh, hello, Mr. Brucher. Yeah, okay, I got it.
Charming fella, isn't he?
He'll be down here in a couple hours and I'm to wait. Check, Mr. Brucher. Goodbye.
His master's voice.
Very funny again. You'd better let me have the keys back, Miss Haynes. The boss isn't going out of town after all. He'll probably want his car.
And I'll probably give it to him myself after I've run a few errands I have in mind. Goodbye, Mr. Marlowe. I hope we meet again in more pleasant surroundings.
You two go to rival schools, Connor?
Get out of here, Marlowe. Get out before you get the same treatment your friend Pete Andrade got.
Oh, you've got to be kidding. You wouldn't do that to me, Connor. I'm not in love with Helen Castile. That goes for you, too, in spades.
Hey, you, Mr. Marlowe.
What?
Over here behind the crates.
I don't want Connor to see us. I'm Helen Castile.
How do you know who I am?
There's an intercom phone in the office you just left.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
I knew Pete was in some trouble. I haven't heard from him in 2 days. Oh, Mr. Marlowe, what they've done to him is terrible. How do you know about it? Did Pete come to you?
No, his mother hired me. I'm a private detective, which, Helen brings up a sharp point. Are you sure you're not playing both sides, baby?
Well, you...
All right, save it. That's all I wanted to know.
What do you want? You mean you just said that to see how I'd act?
Well, I had to be sure. After all, you're still working for Alex Brucher.
Not anymore. I only stayed on before this because I didn't want Pete to be fired.
Oh, Shh. Hold it. I think we've got company.
It could be rats. There's some around.
Yeah, with and without brass knucks. Now listen, honey, for everybody's good, I don't want Pete mixing with Alex Brucher. Now, before you get out of here, tell me fast, where does the boss live?
41 West Adams Boulevard.
41 West. Okay, now go. I'll cover you till you're clear of the place. Go on.
All right, my car's across the street. If you need any help later, Mr.
Marlowe... Get going. That rat may have friends.
Okay. Goodbye, Mr. Marlowe.
Helen got to the front gate, out into her car and away without anybody bothering her. And a couple of minutes later, I covered the same smooth course, and I was beginning to believe that the rats were just that, except that when I was in behind the wheel of my coupe and heading for Adams Boulevard, I picked up a pair of headlights in my rear-view mirror, which for the next 40 minutes have zigzagged, stuck like they were painted there. But finally, a traffic jam gave me all the brake I needed. And a sharp right turn, followed by a lot of speed, left me free and once again on my way to West Adams Boulevard. The place was turn-of-the-century stone-block mansion, but the rest of the neighborhood had gone slumming a long time ago. I was about to try the knocker when I noticed a thin slice of pale light that said the front door wasn't closed all the way. I started in, edging toward the sick light that came from a single lamp in what used to be called the library. And then suddenly I saw him. A man in a smoking jacket, lavishly monogrammed AB, his face beaten raw, his clothing almost shredded, blood clotted thick on the back of his head. He was dead in the corner of the room. Next to the body was a heavy marble lamp base, also bloody. Inches from that, I found something that might as well have been Pete Andrade's calling card. A button made of green suede I had in my pocket just before the company spoke up.
Don't go for your gun, Marlowe. That'd leave us even. So the kid finally made it, huh?
Maybe. Maybe I did it, Connor.
Nuts. You just came in, I know. I was waiting outside. The jerk I had on your trail last year, I figured I'd better leave the office, but quick, I figured right. Tell me, Marlowe, just so I score 100%. What's your angle?
The Andrade kid's mother. I'm a private detective who's working for her. She was afraid of this.
Oh, no. Stop. The sentiment's killing
me. I wish something would. Now, let's call the police.
Not so fast.
What do you mean?
I've already got the rest of my figuring done. But now the kid should be at his girlfriend Helen's flat. I know where it is, and that's where I'm going. You see, Marlowe, I want to be a hero. I want to bring the kid in. Understand?
Oh, sure, sure. Real easy. You want to bring him in dead. That way nobody even mentions the beating you gave him on Brucher's orders. Because he wouldn't stay away from Helen. That way you're clean.
Exactly. Clean as a whistle. Except for you and your big mouth. Now stand still, Peeper. I want to whisper something in your ear.
In just a moment, the second act of Philip Marlowe, but first, you're going to think the laughter of April Fool's Day came late when you listen to CBS this Wednesday night, or it's going to be one of the craziest, merriest, maddest nights of entertainment you've ever heard. Bing Crosby will be playing host to Arthur Godfrey and Perry Como. And even though lots of singing is promised from all three, who knows what's going to happen when the gags start flying. Groucho Marx and Burns and Allen will also be on hand with their famous fun shows this Wednesday. These great stars will be here on most of these same CBS stations. Burns and Allen, Groucho Marx, and Arthur Godfrey and Perry Como as Bing Crosby's guests. Now with our star, Gerald Moore, we return to the second act of Philip Marlowe and tonight's story, The Man on the Roof.
When Connor started toward me with a .38 wrapped in his thick fist, I figured I'd better do something about him and do it fast. I waited until he walked around Bruce's body on the floor and it was out of his line of vision, then I pointed at it.
Connor, look! Look, he's moving!
What's that?
Hey! An old trick, sucker. Now let's throw your gun out of the conversation. We'll start over. Come on, get up.
Get your hands off. Get them off, you crummy.
Look, Heavy, I'm going to get an answer out of you one way or another. Make it easy on yourself. Now get up. I said get up.
All right, Washka. You win this round.
That's better.
What do you want to know?
Helen Castile's address.
She's got her room. Number 4, 3200 Crenshaw.
Hey. Thanks. So long, muscles. I knew there wasn't much more I could do for a desperate hothead named Pete Andrade. He'd already done too much for himself in the wrong direction. I drove down Adams until I'd cooled off enough to call the police. Then I stopped at a phone booth and gave homicide a fast rundown on Alex Bruch's murder. But I hung up before they could ask me Senora Andrade's address in San Fernando or Helen Castile's place on Crenshaw. Because there were two women I wanted to talk to alone before the police moved in. After that, I drove out to Crenshaw and found the number 3200. Room 4 was at the far end of a half-lit hall, and there were voices inside. One was Helen's. The other was Pete Andrade. I reached for my gun.
I went out of my head, Helen. I must have hit him 9 or 10 times hard.
What are we going to do?
I don't know. I've got to think.
It's a little late for thinking, Pete.
Who are you?
He's a private detective.
Yeah, I'm working for your mother. I was, up until I left Bruch's place. He's dead, Pete.
Oh, Pete.
Oh, no. I didn't mean to kill him. But I'm not sorry.
I want you to come along with me, Pete. Quietly. Turn yourself in.
No!
Pete! Helen, get away from me! Stop it! Oh, you little...
He's gone!
Got it! Don't move, Marlo. Don't move or I'll shoot.
You crazy fools.
I knew you wouldn't shoot me, Marlo.
Next time you'll be surprised.
There won't be a next time. We're going to get away. It's our only chance now.
You haven't got a chance if you run. You'll be dogged every minute of your short lives. You'll wind up full of bullets in the dark. You'll be running down a blind alley, and it starts right there with that door. Don't be suckers.
Shut up. We're going to try it, Marlo.
And we'll make it. We've got to have money, Pete.
Yeah, and I know where to get it, too. Brucher always kept plenty of petty cash in the office at the warehouse. I'll take that.
What about the watchman, Pete? Are you going to keep on killing?
Pete, listen. You can get in quietly with Brucher's keys. Corey Haynes has them. The office keys are on the same ring as the car keys. She always borrows them when she uses his car, and she's got it tonight.
Well, I'll get them from her. Where does she live?
Out on Orange Drive. 210, I think.
Will you listen to me a minute? You're heading for the original dead end, both of you. Why don't you give yourselves a break?
Now, what do you call a break, Marlo? Pete rotting in some prison until we're both too old to care? I'd rather have the bullet.
Let's get him out of here. That closet will do. Go on, Marlo, inside. Move!
Sure. What are you waiting for? Go on, close it.
I know what you tried to do for my mother, Marlo, and for Helen and me. I'm sorry it couldn't work out. Thanks, anyway.
Nuts.
I'm leaving, Helen.
I'm ready.
You're not coming. You're staying here.
What?
Marlo was right. This is a blind alley, a dead end, and I won't take you in.
No, Pete, I'm going with you.
No, you're not. Stay back. I mean it.
Please.
Stay back, I said.
Helen! Helen, unlock this door. We still may be able to stop him.
I'm playing this my way now, Marlo. You can stay where you are.
Helen, don't you understand? I'm on your side.
I'm going with him whether he wants me or not. So long, Marlo.
Happy landings, baby. The lock on the closet door gave up before I did, but only because it was older by several years. I got out of the house and kept ahead of the speed limit all the way to Orange Drive and figured for what it was worth that I'd cut Pete's lead down to a scant 10 minutes. I parked in front of a Spudnut coffee shop on the corner and walked down to 210. By the time I got within knocking distance of Corey Haynes' front door, I could see that the only light in the place was spilling out of the sunken double garage that housed the new gray Nash. But when I moved closer, I knew that 10 minutes was all that Pete Andrade had needed. Corey was sprawled out on the grease-spattered concrete floor and very still. Very still. And standing limply against the wall was Helen Castile, staring down at the redhead with a pair of hopeless eyes that seemed already half dead. As I walked down the ramp, she heard me and looked up.
I knew you'd get here. I don't care now.
We're both late, is that it?
Yeah. I didn't see him. He was already gone when I got here. Found her like that.
Well, he must have gotten the keys.
Yes, from her purse. That's it over there.
Uh-huh. Why didn't you follow him? You knew where he was heading.
I couldn't. When I saw her there, I just couldn't, because I think she's dead, too.
No, no. She isn't dead.
You mean she's just out?
Yeah. A long way out, but not dead. From the looks of things, she must have put up quite a scrap. Maybe she... Wait a minute. There's something screwy here.
Oh, Miss Corey! Miss Corey, what's happened?
Who are you?
Miss Corey's maid. What's happened to her?
Well, she's unconscious.
Oh, this is terrible. She knew there was going to be trouble. I swear she didn't. Miss Corey, honey, speak.
How do you know that?
Because she was worried. She told me 4 or 5 times she was going to stay in all evening, like she was expecting somebody.
Sure. It figures all the way. Look here. Are you sure this is her purse?
Certainly is. Was she robbed?
Not exactly, but... Oh, yeah. This clinches it. Now, look, call an ambulance right away. Get Corey into a hospital and hurry.
Oh, yes, sir.
Helen, you stay here with her. Don't leave, understand?
Right.
I'll see you. And that's it, Matthews. That's why I broke a few speed laws getting from Corey's garage down here to the warehouse. Because I had to find Pete and tell him before it was too late.
I'm still not sure you made it, Marlowe.
Look, this was dropped near Bruch's body. I just saw the mate to it in Corey Haynes' garage.
Look, that's not conclusive.
No, but these are. The papers I pulled out of her purse. Take a look at them. Go ahead. One glance will tell you where they came from and why. You get it, don't you, Lieutenant?
Yeah, I get it. Certainly I get it. What a rotten setup.
Well, then you got to let me go up that fire escape and talk to him. He'll listen to me, Matthews. I know he will.
I told you once before, Phil, he's been hit and he's cornered up there. It's driven him haywire. He'll probably blow the top of your head off, but... Go ahead. Go on up and try it. I'll pass the word.
Across the street and started up the fire escape, I knew Pete Andrade from someplace in the shadows on the roof was watching me, every inch of the way. But I climbed up to the fourth floor before I spotted him. His head inched out over the ledge, my own .38 in his hand. I went on to the fifth floor and started up the ladder to the roof when it came.
Stop there. That's close enough.
It's Marlowe, Pete.
I know. That's the only reason you got this far. You got... lots of nerve, Marlowe.
Pete, I didn't bring a gun. Because I just came to ask you a question. Nothing else.
A question?
Yeah. A big one. Did you use anything on Brucher except your fist, Pete?
No. Why? What's the difference?
Plenty. I don't think you killed Brucher.
What? Is this a trick?
No. There look, Pete, no trick. Look at this. I found this green suede button near Brucher's body. I thought it came from your jacket, but it didn't. It was torn from a pair of green suede shoes that Corey Haynes had on tonight.
Corey Haynes? I don't get you.
It means, first, she's a liar. That she saw Brucher tonight. It means she got there after you did. Probably found him unconscious while you had left him and finished the job with a heavy marble lamp base.
You're crazy. This is a trick. Why would she kill him? They were going together.
They had been. Until Brucher got interested in Helen.
Yeah?
After that, Corey was on the way out, and she knew it. She decided to get all she could out of him while she had the chance.
Go on.
Every time she borrowed his car, she used the keys to get into the office, steal information out of the files, and sell it. She was the informer.
Let's see.
I'm coming up, Pete.
How do you know all this?
I found some papers to prove it in her purse. She was in a tough spot when Brucher changed his mind about leaving town tonight.
Yeah?
She had to get the papers back in the files, or Brucher would discover they were missing. But Connor staying in the office prevented it, so she was trapped.
I see.
When she saw a chance to kill Brucher and have you blamed for it, she grabbed at it. Are you convinced, kid?
I almost shot you, Marlowe. Why did you take such a risk and climb up here?
Because your mother has some ideas that I wouldn't like to see her lose, Pete. Also, I wanted my gun back. Well, do I get it?
Yeah. You bet. Here. And thanks, Marlowe. I feel so good now.
I guess I can.
I know just how you feel, kid. I don't climb fire escapes like this every night. Believe me. It was a long, long time before all the scattered reports were in. Before the doctor in the prison ward had said that Pete would be okay, and before Corey Haynes had put a wobbly signature to a full confession of murder. And still another hour went by as I drove out across the wide, flat valley to San Fernando, where the profile of the hills in the east had already begun to show against the gray dawn rising behind them. When I stopped in front of the little house and went up to the door, Senora Andrade was there on the porch. She waited all night. Her expression didn't change when I told her all that had happened. Didn't change, actually, until I was finally ready to leave. Then she put out her hand and took my arm. The lines of worry in her face softened.
Senor Marlowe, last night I had but one son. Now this morning I have two. In my heart, you will always have a home. I am grateful. Gracias.
She was most welcome.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, bringing you Raymond Chandler's most famous character, star Gerald Moore, are produced, directed, and transcribed by Norman McDonald, and are written for radio by Robert Mitchell and Gene Levitt. Gerald Moore may currently be seen starring in Republic's The Blonde Bandit. Featured in our cast tonight were Virginia Gregg, Jack Edwards, Lillian Baeff, Doris Singleton, and Jack Crucian. Detective Lieutenant Matthews is played by Larry Dobkin. The special music is composed and conducted by Richard Arant. Be sure and be with us again next week when Philip Marlowe says...
This time a platinum wristwatch, a body on a lonely strip of beach, and a case of heart failure in a Beverly Hills garage. All added up to blackmail, 25 years old, and a killer who would never be caught.
CBS invites you to hear one of the great ad-libbers in show business, Groucho Marx, every Wednesday night on most of these same CBS stations. Groucho's show, You Bet Your Life, finds the master throwing quips and questions at oddly assorted pairs of contestants. And it's fast, merry, and bright. So, remember, be listening this Wednesday, won't you? When disaster strikes, the Red Cross is on the spot to give relief in the emergency. But its work does not end when the wind dies down, the fire is out, or the flood recedes. It goes on in many different ways, helping to restore people to their normal way of living. The Red Cross is a great humanitarian service in which you have a very direct part, because the funds which are used are the contributions which you make to the Red Cross, and they are funds used in a common sense program that ensures the most good for the most people. Red Cross disaster relief and rehabilitation is one of the great reasons why we must keep our Red Cross ready. All may help. Give now to the 1950 Red Cross Fund. Remember, whatever you gave before, this year, add a quarter more. This is Roy Rowan speaking. Now stay tuned for Pursuit, which follows immediately over most of these same CBS stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
is it?
Another case for Nick Carter, master detective.
Yes, it's another case for that most famous of all manhunters, the detective whose ability at solving crime is unequaled in the history of detective fiction. Nick Carter, Master Detective. Tonight's curious adventure...
Death in the Pines. For Nick Carter and the mystery of the murdered driver.
Well, let's see. There's a truck coming up the grade now. It ought to be them.
Yeah. Just 1:30. That's a tape truck, all right. Now, you guys know what to do. We've done it often enough before.
Sure.
All right. Get going. When the truck gets close enough, I'll put the searchlight in the driver's face like before. He'll stop fast enough. Here goes, guys.
Hey! What the blazes goes on here? What's the big idea?
Get those hands up, wise guy, and get down out of that cab.
You guys can't get away
with
this.
Shut up! You want to stay alive, get down out of that cab and keep quiet. And bring your helper down with you.
You're a bunch of crooks.
Don't you? Don't. They got us. There ain't nothing we can do.
Okay, boys, get busy. Get up on that truck and get that stuff dumped out in the road.
Okay.
Shake it up, boys. We want to get out of here.
Hey, keep your voice moving, Jake. We got another one to take care of yet.
Hey, I know that voice. So you're the guy who's in back of all this hijacking. Now I know you.
Oh, yeah? Well, I hope you enjoy it.
Oh!
What's the idea? What'd you have to kill him for?
Shut up, punk. You don't want to get bumped off, too.
But you didn't have to kill him.
Shut up!
Hey, that changes our plans a little, Jake. Get your men down off the truck. Pick these two stiffs up and put them back in the cab of the truck. Then put a hole in the gas tank and touch a match to it.
Okay, boys, come on down.
There won't be much left for the cops to work on when they get here, which is all right with me. I don't like to see them get killed, but when they know too much, it's the only way.
I see, Coroner. Yes, thanks very much. Yes, thanks. So long.
Might as well let me know the worst, Mr. Carter. After what I've been through, a little more or less doesn't matter.
Mr. Tate, I'm sorry to have to tell you this. But your driver wasn't burned to death. He was shot. Murdered before the truck was set on fire.
Yeah, I was afraid of that. Regan was my oldest and best driver. Been with me for 10 years.
You're having trouble with racketeers?
Yes. Have been for the past year.
How do they work?
Well, I operate about 40 trucks, hauling vegetables and green stuff from South Jersey to the New York markets. It has to be done at night, so we get in New York market before morning. About a year ago, somebody called me on the phone and said he represented a protective agency. And he'd like to sell me protection at $25 a truck.
$25 a truck? That's pretty steep, isn't it?
It's exorbitant. I told him I wouldn't pay it.
So what happened?
2 days later, one of my trucks was stopped and the drivers were beaten. The produce was dumped and destroyed. The next day, the guy called again. I told him I wouldn't pay.
Did you try getting protection from the state troopers?
Sure I did. And they did what they could. Whenever a trooper followed one of the trucks, or when one of their men rode on the truck as a helper, these trucks were never bothered. But the other trucks, and it was the same old story.
I see. Well, how do you account for the fact that the trucks with the troopers on them were never touched?
I don't know. Unless the hijackers had spies at the loading points to watch if the trucks had their regular crews.
And what was the outcome this time?
In the end, I had to agree to pay the $25. And then, for 6 months, there was no more trouble. A week ago, this same guy called and said the ante had been raised from $25 to $40 a truck.
$40?
I told him I couldn't pay that because I didn't make that much. And you know what happened last night.
Yes, yes, I know. Well, are you going to try to keep writing the stuff through?
If you can help me, I will.
I'll do it. And to begin with, I'd like to put my assistant, Patsy Bowen, in your office as a typist.
Sure.
Maybe she can learn something that will start us off in the right direction. Well, Patsy, did you have a nice eventful day in Tate's office?
I learned a few things, Nick, if that's what you mean.
Good. Let's have them.
Mr. Tate makes up the daily schedule of operations based on the orders he receives. Then he turns the completed schedule over to Al Laparo, who's the fleet foreman.
Mm-hmm.
Only Mr. Tate, Laparo, and Dave Morgan, Tate's assistant, know what the orders are. as far as I can find out.
I see. Any suspicions?
Not yet. The Power's been with Tate 9 years and Morgan for about 4 years. When the trouble started, about a year ago, both of them rode the trucks. Morgan was one of the drivers who got beaten up, got knocked out cold before he could see anything.
Doesn't leave us much in the way of anything to go on, does it?
I'm sorry, Nick, but that's all I could get today.
I don't feel bad, Patsy. You did what you could.
What's the next step?
I want to talk to the state trooper who found the truck in which Regan was killed. He may be able to tell me something that's been overlooked.
You say you read my report, Mr. Carter. I don't know that I can tell you anything else.
Were you on the state police force when Tate started having his trouble about a year ago?
Yes, I was.
Well, that business of the hijackers never picking in a truck guarded by state troopers needs explaining. Could there have been any leak from this end?
Absolutely not. I rode several of the trucks myself. None of us ever knew where we were going until Tate's office gave us our orders. Then we went out on the road just as soon as we got those orders.
Good. Then the leak must be on Tate's end. Now, the next thing. Your report gives the impression that the thug simply stopped Tate's truck, killed the driver in cold blood, and then burned the truck for good measure. Was that your personal impression?
Well, no.
Ah.
When I first got there, I was suspicious because the truck hadn't gone off the road or collided with anything that would cause a fire or a wreck. Then I remembered that Tate's trucks had been having trouble a while back, so I took another look around.
And the result of that second examination?
The truck was surrounded by crates which had been thrown off the truck. Crates that were smashed and broken, but not burned. Now, if the hijackers were going to burn the truck, why bother to throw all those crates off the truck first? It just didn't make sense.
That's what I wanted to know. I'd say the gang started out to do the usual job, smashing the cargo and manhandling the crew. But then something happened. Something that made them switch their tactics. And they did something they had never done before. They killed the driver.
Yeah, that explanation would fit the facts as I saw them. But what do you suppose caused the change in plan?
Well, I could make a guess, maybe. Tate told me that Regan was his oldest driver.
Yeah?
Now, somebody in Tate's outfit must be in league with the hijackers. That's the only way they could know as much as they do. I believe that Regan recognized one of Tate's men in the hijack gang.
Sure. And that fits right in with the idea that somebody in Tate's outfit was crossing him. Yes, Mr. Carter, I believe you've hit something.
Have you arranged with Mr. Tate for me to go to work for him?
Oh, no, Scubby. I haven't said anything to him. I don't want him to know.
Well, then how do you know I can get the job?
Tate's lost so many men since Regan was killed a couple of nights ago that he'll be glad to hire anybody. Patsy will fix you up with the necessary papers, licenses, references, and so forth. Wear your old clothes and don't wash your neck, and you'll have no trouble getting hired.
And what do you want me to look for especially, Nick?
Well, according to what Patsy says, the leak either goes through Tate, which hardly seems likely, through Leparo or Morgan, or through somebody else we haven't found out about yet. So get a line on things in general, on anyone who may look suspicious. Oh, and if you're riding a truck that gets held up, don't try to shoot it out, Scubby. Just let things ride.
We'll see about that when the time comes.
It's a 40-to-1 shot against your getting stopped, but that's the same. Watch your step. These men, whoever they are, have 2 murders on their head, and they won't balk at a couple more.
Men looking for jobs, line up over here. New men over here.
Hey, buddy, who's the guy over there at the desk?
Oh, that's Al Leparo, the fleet foreman.
Oh, that's the guy. Looks like a tough egg.
Don't worry, fella. He ain't turning nobody down these days. This outfit's got the finger on it. They had 40 men walk out on him yesterday. And I got a hunch this new gang ain't gonna last long either.
Oh, you mean on account of the killings the other day?
Yeah, that and the beating up of a couple of other drivers.
Recently?
Yeah, night before last.
Hey, that ain't so good, is it?
Ah, what's the difference? A job, ain't it?
Hey, who's the other guy?
Huh? Oh, that's Dave Morgan, old man Tate's assistant.
All right, report to the garage at once. Next?
Mike Clausen's the name, Mr. Leparo. Here are me papers.
Mm-hmm. You worked here before, ain't you?
Sure, I drove for you,
but... never mind that. You ain't working here no more. Right, Morgan?
Right, Leparo. Nothing doing on that guy.
Oh, but what's the matter? I got a good record. I ain't never had no trouble.
Maybe not, but you ain't wanted here. Get out.
Next. Ah, the big farmer.
Who's next?
Oh, me. The name's Wilson.
Where's your papers?
Oh, yeah. Here.
Mm-hmm. Wilson, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, you're hired. Report to Matt Steigon, truck number 11. You start as helper at $23 a week. Satisfied?
Sure, boss. Okay by me.
Tell Steiger he picks up his load tonight at Freeman's Farm down South Jersey. He knows where it is. Get going.
Right. Thanks.
So they took you on, did they, Scubby? I thought they would.
Yes. I'm phoning from a lunchroom where I just ate.
Anything happened yet?
Well, just before they gave me a job, an old-timer named Mike Clausen was turned down. He used to work for Tate years ago, but LaPero wouldn't take him back.
I see. Maybe they didn't want to take on anyone who ever worked there before, or who has been there for long.
Well, maybe it doesn't mean anything, Nick, but it looks as if the...
What's the trouble, Scubby?
I'm not sure, Nick, but I just realized the guy in the booth next to me here isn't saying a word. He went into his booth as I came into this one. But he hasn't dialed a number or said anything yet.
Looks as if somebody's on to you already. Any idea who it could be?
No idea at all. Oh, but how could anybody know about me so soon?
There's always the chance that somebody's recognized you. Now, keep your eyes open, Scubby. Don't start anything.
Any orders?
No. Let me know at once if anything worthwhile happens. And good luck to you.
Thanks. Hey, what are you going to be doing?
I have several lines of investigation that I want to follow up here in the city. There are certain angles of this case that I want to clear up here before I do anything else. So long, Scubby. See you soon. I hope.
Gosh, Matt, driving one of these trucks is no sense, is it?
How do you mean, kid?
Well, I've been driving a truck around in the city and... it ain't been like this at all. We spent the afternoon loading the stuff on the truck. Now we gotta spend all night riding it back to town.
You don't like it, huh?
Oh, I'm beginning to think it wasn't such a bright idea, hiring on with this paid outfit. Especially with a chance of getting beat up throwing in free.
Ah, cheer up. You might ride for weeks and never get stopped at all.
Gosh, this is a lonely section of the country, ain't it? Nothing but these scrub pines both sides of the road.
That's right.
Hey, I'm getting tired, Matt. You know, it's been a long time since I done so much work. Mind if I take a little nap?
Ah, go ahead. About 1 o'clock now. I'll drive till 3, then you can take over. We'll be out in the main road by then.
Okay. Call me if you need me.
Yeah, sure, kid.
What you stopping for?
Somebody is signaling us with a flashlight to stop. I wonder
what... Oh, no. No, don't stop, Matt. It may be a holdup. Remember old man Tate's orders? No truck stop for nothing.
Oh, it's a state trooper. There's nothing to worry about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can see the uniform now. Okay. I'll get out and see what he wants. Hey, what's the matter, officer? What... Hey, that's our phony uniform. You're no regular cop.
This is a guy, all right. One of you fellas take care of the driver.
Look out, Matt!
Come down out of that cab, fella. You know what's good for you.
Matt, it's a trap!
Shut up, Dick, and don't move. I got you covered. Now, don't try to pull
it out. No!
Hey, quit that. Cut it out.
There, that takes care of you, you rat. Now for the other.
Here you are, copper.
Oh! Matt!
Not out yet. Here. Oh. You won't do no more fighting for a while. Okay, boys, come on.
Gosh, I'm tired, Patsy. I've done more of my own leg work today than I've done in years. I almost wish I'd kept Scubby here to do the walking around. Gone out on the truck myself.
Did you find out anything, Nick?
Yes, Patsy, I think so. But I can't be sure for a little while yet. Not until I get some more answers to some of the thousands of questions I've asked today.
There have been several messages for you. I think this is probably the only one that's really important. Yeah.
Oh, thanks. Hmm. I thought so. He's trying to borrow money. At least all that much of it makes me positive I'm on the right track. Any report from the state troopers, Patsy?
Yes, they think they've located the place. They're going to call you later this evening when they get the details.
Good. That'll give me time to join them before they make a raid. I don't want to miss being in at the kill.
Awake, Wilson?
Yeah. Oh, who are you?
Matt Steiger, your driver.
Oh, yeah, I remember now. They stopped us. I tried to fight, and they knocked me out. How about you?
Yeah, they conked me, too.
Yeah?
I wonder why they didn't shoot us and be done with it.
Yeah, I wonder. Hey, where are we now? Any idea?
No, but I seem to remember taking a long ride last night after we left the truck.
I wonder what time it is. I don't know. It's still dark, though.
Yeah. Hey, Wilson, I've been wondering. I heard one of them thugs call you Dick and Copper when they were scrapping with you. Are you a copper?
Well, kind of one, yeah. Just trying to get a line on what's going on in this Tate outfit.
Yeah?
But how in heck did that guy know it was me?
Did Tate know what you are?
No. Nobody knew about me working for Tate but me and my boss. Hey, wait a minute.
What?
Right after I got the job, I phoned my boss, and somebody in the next phone booth overheard what I told him. Boy, they trapped me neat as you please.
They probably was afraid of you.
Looks like it. Well, the first thing to do is get out of here.
Well, I've been working at the ropes that I got my hands tied together with, and I can't budge them at all. They're too tight for me.
Well, I think maybe I can get mine loose if I have time. I think my boss taught me several tricks to get out of ropes like this.
Yeah, she'll have to get us out of this one, then. I can't...
Hold it, Matt.
Yeah,
somebody's coming.
Time we got that red-headed punk waked up. Boss is due any minute now.
With pleasure. Come on, you. Leave me assist you to a chair. Sorry you can't walk by yourself tied up like that, but... That wouldn't be etiquette.
Come on, come on. Cut the comedy.
Wake up, you. Come on, copper. Get them eyes open.
Ooh. Hey. Hey, what's the matter? Hey, what you trying to do?
There you are, Mike. You want me to soften him up for you?
Let's see if he talks first. Maybe he'll talk without any persuading.
Well, okay, but I hope he needs some waking over. I enjoy that.
All right, punk. You gonna talk?
Talk about what?
There's no use stalling. We know you're Nick Carter's man.
Well, if you know that, what you want me to say?
We know you called Carter yesterday before you left New York. What'd you say to him? What'd you tell him?
Hey, I know you.
Huh?
You're the guy who wore the phony state trooper's uniform when you held us up last night.
Yeah? Well, knowing that ain't gonna help you none.
Ooh! Ow!
Come on, spill it. How much do you know?
Okay, he ain't gonna talk, Mike. It's gotta be a real job. I gotta go to work on him.
Yeah, I guess you're right, Jake.
Ooh.
Go ahead, make it good.
Sure. Oh, let me take my coat off first so I don't feel cramped.
Let me have it. I'll put it on the back of the chair.
Thanks, Mike. Oh, you better put my gun in the pocket of my coat so it won't get in my way when I really get going.
Okay. Now, let's see some action.
All right, you red-headed stool pigeon. Now spill it. Spill it all or I'll... What the...
Come on, Jake. There's trouble out there.
Well, that's a funny one.
Matt, do you see what I see?
What do you mean?
Jake left his coat hanging on the back of that chair there. There's a gun in the pocket of that coat.
Oh, boy, what a break if we can only get loose.
Just a minute. My hands are almost free.
Good.
Wait a minute. There. Now... Get the feet loose. There. Yeah, that does it. Now the gun. Now let him come back.
Hey, what's...
Drop that gun, you're covered.
Oh, yeah? Well, this'll show you. Yeah.
Oh, you would you? Here.
Oh, you killed me. You killed me.
You got him, Wilson. Get me loose and I'll give you a hand. They'll be back in here.
Right, the gun is empty. Gee, we're in a spot.
He killed a boss. Come on.
Uh-oh. Yeah, the boss is dead. I'm getting out of here.
Yeah, let's get going.
Listen, this room. Listen. They're leaving.
Yeah. Wait a minute. There. There you are, man.
Oh, gee. Thanks, Wilson. Gosh, am I
glad to get out of them ropes.
Hey, Matt, this is the screwiest thing I ever heard of.
Yeah. Why do you suppose they beat it off like that?
You got me. But come on, let's get out of this place. They might come back as fast as they went out.
Yeah. Okay, give me a chair. I'll break this door down for you.
Okay. Gosh, Matt. There he is on the floor, the boss. And two holes through his forehead.
You sure hit him square in the bullseye.
Wait till I take off his mask and see if I know... Matt. It's Mr. Tate.
Who?
The owner of the trucking company.
Mr. Tate?
Yeah.
Tate racketeering his own business? Attacking his own trucks?
But that doesn't make sense, Matt.
Boy, I'll say it doesn't. Why should he want to destroy his own business?
And why would he ask Nick to investigate the... Hey, we got to get out of here.
Yeah.
We're going to get out.
Maybe some more of them in there.
Oh. Can you see them?
Yeah. Oh, they're state troopers.
Oh,
it's okay,
boy.
Man.
Open up in there. Come on with your hands up. Come on, you're surrounded and outnumbered.
Don't shoot. We're coming out.
Get that door open before they shoot.
We surrender.
Get your hands up. I got two here, man. Watch the back of the house.
Right, Sergeant.
Oh, gosh, are we glad to see you.
Yeah, keep your hands up.
Oh, yeah, sure, sure. Look, I'm Scubby Wilson, and this is Matt Steiger. I'm Nick Carter's assistant.
You look it. Who's the dead man lying there?
Well, that's Mr. Tate. I just shot him.
No, you did. Well, that'll send you to the chair, all right.
Oh, no. No, you don't understand. He's the chief of the hijackers. Well, he was holding us prisoners here.
That's a good one. Where's the gun you killed him with?
Well, it's in the other room.
Keep your hands up.
But, officer, you don't understand.
I suppose you're going to tell me you shot him in self-defense, huh?
Yeah. That's just what I did. Well, look, you can ask Matt here.
That's right, officer. He was going to kill us both.
Yeah.
Sure, sure. Where's the gun he was going to kill you with?
Well, it was in his hand when I saw it last.
Well, it ain't here now. You're a bum liar, feller. I suppose that after you shot him between the eyes, killing him instantly... He walked over to the window, threw his gun away, and then came back here, lay down, and died.
Oh, but gosh, officer, I saw him.
Put your hands out.
Huh? What?
Put your hands out.
Oh, but you can't put handcuffs on me.
No, watch me.
Be sure they're on good and tight, son.
I will, that.
Nick! Nick!
Oh, hello, Scubby. Having a good time?
You know this guy, Mr. Carter?
Does he know me? Oh, tell him who I am, Nick.
Yes, Sergeant, I'm afraid I have to confess that I do know him. He's my assistant, although he hasn't been much of assistance in this case.
Shall I let him go, then?
Yes, yes, I'll take charge of him.
Okay, if you say so.
Oh, gosh, Nick, am I glad to see you. Oh, this is Matt Steiger, the guy who was driving the truck I was on.
Hello, Mr. Carter.
Glad to know you.
Hey, look, I heard some shooting a few minutes ago. Did you get some of the gang?
Yes, Scubby. Morgan and four men. We ran their car off the road and caught them all. Morgan's pretty badly wounded, but he'll pull through.
So Morgan was in on it after all.
Morgan was the head of the gang.
Oh, no. No, Morgan wasn't the head of the gang, Nick. The head of the gang is lying there, dead. And I shot him. Put two bullets in him in self-defense.
Who is he? You know him?
Know him. It's Mr. Tate.
Mr. Tate? Why, he had nothing to do with this.
He sure did, Nick. Why, he was holding us prisoners here. Sure, Matt can tell you.
That's true, Mr. Carter. He tried to kill Wilson, and Wilson shot him.
I tell you, Tate had nothing to do with this gang, Scubby.
Oh, what makes you so sure, Nick?
I did a lot of investigating in town today, and I found that Morgan has been trying to borrow money anywhere and everywhere he could to take advantage of what he called a chance to get going a good business, dirt cheap. Well, that obviously meant Tate's business, especially since the $40 a truck the racketeers asked was unquestionably intended to drive Tate out of business rather than to get the money out of him.
But Morgan was one of the drivers who got beaten up, Nick.
Who said so? Morgan. Nobody else knew anything about it. And it gave him a swell alibi. I think that Regan, the driver who was killed the other day, probably was shot because he recognized Morgan.
But, Nick, everything you say about Morgan could have been true of Tate just as well.
Not quite, Scubby. I found out several other things during my investigation today that proved definitely that Morgan's the one.
But, Nick, I shot Tate not 5 minutes ago while he was trying to kill me.
I wonder.
You shot him 5 minutes ago. How does it happen that he's been dead for at least 3 hours?
Dead for 3 hours.
No question about it. Rigor mortis has already begun to set in. Scubby, somebody's put one over on you.
Well, what do you mean, Nick?
Where's the gun you shot him with?
Well, the trooper took it.
Yeah, that's right. Here it is, Mr. Carter.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Look here. How does it happen that you shot him with blank cartridges?
Oh, Nick, now don't
now,
tell
here
me...
are the shells I just took out of that gun you used. Four of them have been fired previously. And you can see that the two left for you to fire, have had the bullets pried out of them. Now you see the mark? At the edge of the shell?
Yeah.
So you couldn't have shot him.
But, Mr. Carter, I saw Wilson plug him. I saw him fallen dead as the door closed behind him. There's no question about it.
There's no question but what you thought you saw that. But it was all planned, just that way.
Planned?
Certainly. How come you were able to get out of the ropes you were tied up with so fast? How come there was nobody in the room when you got hold of the gun? Why do you suppose that gun was left where you could get your hands on it? That is what happened, isn't it?
Yes, Nick. As right as if you'd been here to see it.
It couldn't have been any other way. Tate probably had a hunch Morgan was guilty and trailed him here. Morgan caught him, shot him with his gun. Then he wiped his prints off it, and he planted it where you could get at it. Then, at the psychological moment, Morgan, with a mask over his face, opened the door so you could see him and shot at you. Then you shot at him, as he knew you would, using the two shells he had left in the gun for you, the two shells with no bullets in them. Then he pretended to fall dead, carefully shutting the door as he did so that you couldn't see what happened next.
Oh, I see, Nick. And then he put Tate's body there by the door with a mask over his face.
Right.
Gosh.
When you opened the door, there was Tate's body, shot through the head with the very gun you held in your hand. A gun in which the police would find your fingerprints, and yours only. Morgan would have made sure they found it.
Boy, what a setup.
It was perfect. Matt would have had to swear he saw me do it. And I was so completely fooled that... Why, I would have confessed to the murder in any court in the country.
Yes, Gabby. You still trust too much to what you hear and see. Before you can be a really first-class detective, you'll have to learn to distrust everything until you've analyzed it in the light of all the evidence.
This has been another of the strange adventures of Nick Carter, Master Detective, which are brought to you regularly at this time by WOR Mutual. Well, Nick, what about next week's story? Can you give us a hint?
Next week, my story concerns a murderer who killed his victims according to the sign of the zodiac under which they were born.
A very unpleasant and dangerous man, I might add.
Yes, definitely. Patsy and I got so close on his trail that he tried two different times to get rid of us.
But in his attempts to be very clever, he made a bad mistake, and Nick caught him.
And caught the murderer, too, I imagine.
Quite right. After a chase. I call the story The Horoscope Murders. So long. See you next week.
So long.
So long to you, Nick and Patsy. In the strange adventure you have just heard, Nick Carter was impersonated by Lon Clark, Patsy by Helen Choate, Scubby by John Cade. Original music was played by Lou White. The entire production was written and directed by Jock McGregor. Next week at the same time, listen to another curious experience of Nick Carter entitled
The Horoscope Murders, or Nick Carter and the Mystery of the Avenging Astrologer.
This story is a copyrighted feature of Street & Smith Publications, Incorporated. The Return of Nick Carter is produced in the studios of WOR and is broadcast over most of these stations every Saturday evening at 7 o'clock Eastern War Time. And don't forget that the adventures of Nick Carter's adopted son, Chick Carter, are broadcast over most of these stations Mondays through Fridays at 5:30 p.m. Eastern War Time. This is Mutual.
That's Case Closed for this week. I'll be back next Wednesday with another 60 minutes of crime stories. Between now and then, you can find past episodes of this show and everything else Relic Radio at relicradio.com. Don't forget that donate button if you'd like to help support this and all the shows. And there's a Shoutcast stream there as well, too, with more old-time radio. Thanks to those who have donated. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next week with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for relicradio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.